This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, before we have a heavy, heavy talk about the Constitution and the country and the courts and deportation and all that terrible stuff, which we'll get to in just a moment, I want to get to this, which is more terrible, obviously, honoring the fallen. We lost a couple Marines in training last week. Well, not training. They were on the southern border. Okay, so they're down there for a reason. It was a non-combat thing. It happens. Vehicles crash. This was a vehicle accident. It's as common as anything. It happens. And in ancient times, men died falling off their horses. Okay, sucks. But it happened, and they died serving their country. Lance Corporal Albert Aguilera, who's 22 years old, and Lance Corporal Marcelino Gamino, he was 28 years old. Semper Fi, young brothers, they gave their lives for this country. Honor their sacrifice as we do here on the first. All right? Okay. Now, let's talk about the courts, the Trump administration, you and me. Let's talk about the United States of America. And this is going to come back to the Supreme Court. Just let's give away the end of it here in case you weren't paying attention. Most everybody was. Over the weekend, the Supreme Court decided that the Trump administration cannot use the Alien Enemies Act of 1798 to deport members of Tren de Aragua, a prison gang. Now, I should be perfectly clear about this. It was a temporary thing. The Supreme Court says, hey, you're not allowed to deport them anymore. We have to wait on this court and that court. We'll wait on a couple things. But at least for now, you're not going to do it. We have to slow down and make sure we're doing this the right way. Okay. So that is actually what I wanted to talk to you about. And I am perfectly aware that what I'm about to say is going to chafe on many, many people. You may get angry. You may turn off the television. You may send me hate mail, and all that stuff is fine. It doesn't change anything about what I'm going to say. So here's what it is. First, I want you to picture this. I want you to picture that you are playing Monopoly, game of Monopoly, against somebody you don't like at all. Picture the person who's the person you hate the most. Just you and them, you're playing a game of Monopoly, okay? And in Monopoly, as you are well aware, even if you've never played it yourself, there are rules, of course. There's dice. You have to roll the die. There are different cards. You want to try to land on this property. There are little cards at random that you get. Hey, you get $500. Hey, you owe $500. Just random things like that. I am going to administer the rules of the game. There are rules of the game. I'm going to oversee the game and administer the rules of the game. Now, let's say the person you're playing against decides they don't have any need for these rules, no need for these rules at all. So when it's time for them to cast a die, instead of using the game's die, they simply grab the loaded die that they brought along that rolls whatever number they want. Now, this would be the point where you would think I, the administrator of the rules, would step in and say, no, but I let them go. No, use your own die. It's all good there. When they get a chance card or something they don't like, oh, pay 10% in taxes, don't like that. They just put it back and keep fishing till they get a card they want. Me, I'm sitting there overseeing the whole thing. No, it's fine. Do whatever you want. That's what I do when it's their turn. But then, when your turn comes along, you have to use, you're going to use the dice I give you, the dice of the game. No, don't think you're going to switch out that chance card. Nope. You do the game the right way. You follow the rules. I am the administrator, and you will follow the rules. Let me ask you something. Who's going to win that game? It's inevitable. The game cannot be won by you. It's not humanly possible, especially when the administrator is very clearly in on allowing them to do the most evil things in the world, and you have to follow the rules. Now, let's talk about the country, the courts, immigration, the Constitution. Let's chat, shall we? One, let me go ahead and get this out of the way right off the bat, and I want to make sure I'm crystal clear about this. Where we are as a country, it saddens me a great deal. What I'm about to talk about, I don't celebrate. I'm not cheering it on. I'm not, I think what I'm about to talk about, what I'm about to say, is the most awful thing in the world. Because I want the United States of America to stay together, to be a good, wonderful country that exists for my kids and their kids and their kids after them. That's my desire. But here's where we are as a country. The American left hates the United States of America. It sucks, but that's where we are. Half the country hates the country. And because they hate the country, when they are elected, when they get power, you saw this for 4 years under Joe Biden, a part of hating the country means they will ignore every law, they will ignore every rule, they will simply set these things aside, and they will bring in as many barbarians, as many foreigners as they can possibly bring in in the time they have. They won't just open up the doors at the border. They will fly them in as fast as they can. They will take large chunks of your money and they'll send planes to other countries and load those planes full of illegals and fly them into your town. That is how committed the communists are to destroying the United States of America. And while Joe Biden did that, while Biden and the Maoists in his government did that, no court stopped them. They were never stopped. Nothing was treated as an emergency. Nothing was, there were no breaks on it at all. And there were all kinds of violations of the law and the rules and norms. There was nothing. They just kept going. Nothing stopped them. Over and over. Remember one morning? Do you remember the Haitians? Remember the Haitians? One morning we woke up and there were 14,000 freaking Haitians on the southern border. And we're looking around all, wait, what? And then we started to get a little suspicious because it was a day or two, and the administration, do you remember the administration kept trying to stop news coverage of it? Hey, don't show those people on camera. I believe it was 3 days. Might be wrong about that, but I believe it was 3 days. We woke up, and they were gone in one night. The Biden administration waited until everyone was asleep and the sun dipped down. And the Biden administration took 14,000 Haitians and brought every single one of them into your country. Maybe they're going to school with your children right now. Every rule, every norm, every law set aside. And the courts, including the Supreme one, sat back. Ah, it's all right. Well, maybe we'll get to that. Well, hold on just a moment. The rules of the game completely set aside, completely ignored. The administrators of the rules couldn't be bothered to step in. For 4 years, the mnemonic communists known as Democrats filled up your country with as many foreigners as humanly possible. Now, we have 4 years. And I want to be crystal clear about this. You cannot get them all out in 4 years, no matter what you do. It's not humanly possible. That many people spread out over a country this vast or so mixed into so many communities and ingrained here without any breaks, without any courts, without anything, the Trump administration cannot possibly remove 20 million people with the speed Joe Biden brought them in. That is with no courts, no obstructions at all. With no obstructions at all, we cannot fix what Democrats have broken in the last 4 years. That's with no obstructions. But instead, what we have now is we are well north of 100 days into the Trump presidency. We are roughly 1/8 done with the Trump presidency. And court after court after court after court after court, including the Supreme one, continues to throw up roadblocks every chance they get. Whoa, 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 not quite yet. Hold on, you got to go through that. Hey, he deserves some due process. Whoa, hold on. That's got to go to the lower court with an injunction. So I understand there are all kinds of legal arguments. Well, you have to do things the right way and due process. And you know what? And I'm not actually going to argue against you with any of those things. You can bring up the habeas corpus and all that. That's fine, but totally fine. I'm not a legal scholar. Do not pretend to be. But I am most definitely somebody who can see reality. And here is the reality. If the communists are allowed to import as many foreign barbarians into the country as they possibly can, and they will, with their 4 years of power, and we are not allowed to deport them as quickly as they have imported, then the United States of America will end. The country is simply going to come apart and break apart in some way that's going to be terrible. We will break apart. We will end. Most likely something got awful like a civil war or some kind of horrible thing. But it will end, and it will end terribly. And that is a fact. I don't care about any of your other arguments. What about the Constitution? What about the Fifth? I don't care what your arguments are. If we are not allowed to deport foreigners at the same pace they import foreigners, we're finished. It's over. Can't be won. Can't be done. And so my final message here as I wrap this up is actually not for you. It's for the Trump administration. And I'm assuming they know this, but maybe they don't. So here's the reality of it. I don't want a dictator. I want to be free. I want to live in a constitutional republic as a free man where I get a voice, a say. I do not want a dictator. I hope you don't either. We are going to get one. If the Trump administration is not willing to go far enough, ignore these courts, including the Supreme Court, and move forward with the mass deportation of barbarians, if the Trump administration is not allowed to implement the will of the voters, and we still see poll after poll after poll, the will of the voters remains with Trump and mass deportations. If the will of the voters is not allowed by the courts or this or that, then the right will choose a dictator very shortly, in your lifetime, including in mine. If the Trump administration is given the mandate it was given, and for 4 years they are prevented from mass deportations, the next Republican nominee will be somebody who promises to throw journalists in prison. I'm not even close to kidding. That is how serious this situation is right now, and that is my fear. And I hope the Trump administration knows this. Ignore the Supreme Court. Anyone who tries to stop you, anyone, any entity, any human being, no matter their title, throw them in prison too. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. I love feeling full of energy all the time. It's nice because, look, we all understand that as you start to get older, start to run out of gas more, right? Earlier in the day, it's 2 p.m, someone fire up the coffee pot. You know, you don't have to feel like that. You need to get your levels where they need to be, and you need to do it naturally with natural herbal supplements from Chalk. Chalk has the highest quality natural herbal supplements I've ever seen in my life. They are, I'm trying to decide if calling them hardcore anti-communists is underselling it. They're on our team. I'll put it to you that way. Go try it. Try a subscription. I take a male vitality stack every day, if you're wondering. They have female vitality stacks, too. They have so much. Go. Give it 90 days and tell me you don't feel like a new person. Chalk.com/JesseTV. I want to talk about Dr. Fauci and COVID and the system and the lies. We're not going to let this go. We're not going to allow the destruction of American freedom, jobs, economy, school, children. We're not going to just let it go and act, I'm not going to let it go. I'm not. There are things that I'm never going to let go. I'm never going to forget. I'm going to continue to bring this up until I get some sort of justice on this earth. I want to bring up an interesting aspect of it, because there's a lot of things we could talk about when it comes to COVID, but Remember all the debate over the origins of COVID? Right away. Remember right when it came out, people wanted to know, hey, new virus, where did it come from, right? Was it Africa? And then we found, okay, it was China. All right, I'm learning like you're learning. We're all learning at once. I'm watching TV, I'm reading stuff. Okay, came from China. All right, we got that. And then there were debates. Well, it looks like it came from Wuhan, city in China. Oh, okay. Well, I don't know about Wuhan. I've never been there before. All right. You say so. Cool. And then didn't take long for people to figure out, well, wait a minute. There's a lab in Wuhan. A lab that works with viruses? That's interesting. Hey, is that where it came from? And that question, more specifically, the answer to that question was so revealing to me early on about how ugly this whole thing was. Because immediately, every single part of the system, the freaking Central Intelligence Agency, every part of the system, the media, the doctors, everybody, insisted that that couldn't be it. But you didn't know that. Nobody knew that yet. What do you mean? Why are you demanding that? You don't know. It was from an animal market or something. Okay, maybe. But you seriously? You know it didn't? You know it didn't come from the lab? Fauci was all over TV saying this.
We still open up and keep always an open mind as to whether or not this had to do with a virus that was isolated out in the environment and that came into a lab. And then had what most people refer to as a lab leak. I believe that is less likely that that's the case, but I also believe we need to keep an open mind and have all possibilities be investigated. But the evidence from the virology community points strongly towards a natural occurrence.
Yeah, no. Look, we need to look into it, but it's definitely probably a natural occurrence, except we just got a report out from the White House, COVID report. And says a lot of things in it. But one thing we know now, we know, while Fauci was on TV talking about having an open mind, Fauci, he worked to destroy anybody who said it might come from a lab. He worked to discredit anybody, people part of that community. We're talking accomplished people. Fauci worked really hard to discredit and destroy them. If they said it came from a lab, the lab, that doesn't sound like keeping an open mind. That sounds like a nefarious supervillain working very hard to cover something up for some reason. In fact, almost sounds like somebody trying to cover up a crime, doesn't it? And I think about that. I think about the fact that Fauci made $3.5 million last year. I think about the fact that Fauci is still on television saying things like this.
Maybe it was, I think what people are getting confused is the idea of shutting things down temporarily was the right decision. Everyone agrees.
We all tell flatten the curve, but when the curve got flattened, we didn't get to send kids back to school.
What happened is that there became almost an ideological divide. One thing is very clear, masks work. You see a lot of people say, oh, masks don't work. Masks worked.
No, they didn't. Everyone knows that. That stupid mask you wear didn't stop a microscopic virus. Everyone knows that. Don't set aside your common sense for somebody with a lapel pin that says doctor on it. Everyone knows that. That stupid paper mask of yours did nothing at all. Everyone knows that. But he feels completely comfortable saying things like that, raking in a bunch of money, because we've never had an actual reckoning. And remember, it was Fauci's recommendation, it was his endless recommendations that paved the road for tyrants like this.
Your right to go out for a walk in the park, go out for a walk because you need to get out of the house, the dog is getting on your nerves, fine, don't infect me. You don't have a right to infect me. If you are going to be in a situation in public where you may come into contact with other people in a situation that is not socially distanced, you must have a mask or a cloth covering nose and mouth. That is by executive order.
Maybe that doesn't anger you or blow you away, but you realize a governor should never talk to you like that. Here's what you're allowed to do, and if you're going to do this, you better wear that, or you better do that, and you're not allowed to do that. I've made the... Still to this day, I can feel my blood pressure rising. You know what? We need to go. Let's talk about your shoes. And no, look, it's me. You know I'm not judging you for any kind of fashion choices you've made. I wouldn't be qualified to do so anyway. My wife has to talk me out of wearing sweats. I'm worried about your shoes, though. Your knees, your back, your hips, your feet. How do they feel at the end of the day? Tired, sore, even? That's your shoes, man. That's why Gravity Defier exists. G-Defy, if you have to shorten it up. It's shoes, but unique shoes. You see, they have this special technology in them that makes it easier on your whole body as you walk around. Your crappy shoes are causing pain in your hips, in your knees, in your feet, in your back. You want to get rid of that? Just try one pair, and I bet you'll own five of them eventually. That's how incredible these things are. They're miraculous. Listen, you want a nice deal? Text Jesse to 9188. That gets you 30% off orders $120 or more. Jesse to 9188. We'll be back.
My relationship with President Xi is great. It's been great for a long time. We've had a very good relationship, and I think we'll make a deal with China. If we don't make a deal, we'll set it. We'll just set the number, and, you know, think they'll want to be a part of the United States. We're doing great. This is the golden age, as Paul said. We're talking about the golden age. It will never be a time like this, in my opinion. And China wants to be a part of that, too.
Okay. I got to be honest with you. I follow this stuff for a living. You follow this stuff, you know, because you enjoy it. I'm the same way as you. I don't know what's going on with the tariffs. Are they in place? Are they coming? Are they not in place? I don't know, but I know Stephen probably knows because he's really good at all this stuff. Joining me now, Stephen W. Mosier, president of the Population Research Institute. He also wrote a wonderful book about the fall of China, hopefully, the devil in communist China. Okay, Stephen, the tariffs specifically when it comes to China, what is in place? What is not in place? What is coming to in place? Where are we at with all this?
Well, where we at is that China can dish it out, but they sure can't take it because they've been dishing it out to us for decades, and they put tariff barriers on our goods, and they have used economic pressure to try to get us to do what they want. They've been cheating, lying, and stealing. The Communist Party I'm talking about now, since the beginning, stealing intellectual property, sending fentanyl here to make money and killing Americans in the process. Sending agents across the open southern border, sleeper agents who are going to, I'm afraid, plague us during an eventual conflict. So they've been doing a lot of things, and they've been getting away with it because no one has responded in the way that they should have. And now we finally have a president who is responding to China appropriately. And what he's doing is he's putting the same kind of tariffs on Chinese goods that they're putting on us and taking into account their theft of intellectual property and their non-tariff barriers and all the rest. And so we've got these tariffs now of, I think they're totaling up to, I have trouble too, because they keep going up, right? They started 10%, then we had an extra 10% because of fentanyl. Then we went up to 154%. Then China foolishly responded, and now we're at 250%. So the size, look, China's economy is going to collapse. You can see it collapsing in real time right now. And we can talk about what's happening on the ground in China. People are desperate.
Yes, I actually would love to talk about exactly that. I have about a million things I want to talk about with you, but I realize we don't have time for that. So I want you to explain to me the Chinese economy, its collapse or its impending collapse, because I'll tell you something that has blown away me as I just watched, Stephen. I'm not an expert like you are, is how much money they throw around everywhere, all over the globe. Everywhere you look, they're buying off this, they're paying for that, spending an inhuman amount of money on their military. There's no way they have this kind of money.
Well, the only way they have this kind of money is from the export sector of the economy, right? The things that they produce using virtual serf labor, slave labor, actually, and produce goods. You know, if you have slaves, you can produce goods very cheaply, especially if they're hardworking people like the Chinese who have great work ethic. And these people are being worked 7 days a week, 12 hours a day in amazing shifts, lengthy shifts that Americans wouldn't tolerate. They can't organize labor unions. They can't strike for higher wages. If they object, they're met with police force. So they work long and hard for slave wages. So they have this export sector of the economy all along China's coast. A couple hundred million people are involved in that. It's based in Guangdong and Shanghai and up north in Tianjin. And so every day you have these tens of millions of Chinese workers, these minions, working, producing goods for export. Where do those goods go? Well, a lot of those goods come to the United States, about 16% of the goods. So that's one in every six of the shoes that they make comes to the United States. We've got the biggest consumer economy in the world. And actually, some other stuff comes to the U.S. too, indirectly from Vietnam and Indonesia and Hong Kong, which is transshipped because the Chinese Communist Party is trying to trick us into thinking that not all of these cheap slave labor goods come from China, but they do. They're just shipped through other places. So right now with the tariffs, no one is buying those goods because all of a sudden they're not the cheapest place to get shirts and shoes. And so the containers are huge piles of containers piling up in China's major ports that will never be shipped anywhere because they're filled with goods that were ordered months ago from the United States, and those orders have now been canceled. There are huge numbers of ships sitting offshore, most of which are owned by China. I mean, talking about dozens of container ships off Guangdong, dozens of container ships off Shanghai, waiting in ports for cargo that will never come. So about half of all the container voyages between China and the U.S., are being canceled right now in real time. And that'll only make the current backlog worse. Those ships aren't going anywhere because no one wants to buy the cheap Chinese goods. And many of these goods, look, were made for the American market. For example, the Christmas orders should be coming in now for things like artificial Christmas trees. Who buys artificial Christmas trees? Well, not the Europeans, not the Southeast Asians. Americans do. And we're not going to be buying them this year. Who buys trampolines for your backyard for kids? Spend $300 or $400 or $500 on a trampoline for your kids so they can bounce around happily. Well, the Europeans don't do that. The South Americans don't do that. The Americans do that. That market is now gone. So there are lots of goods that have been produced that can't be sold. I look at Chinese videos of warehouses filled with piles of shoes and piles of clothes and piles of other goods that are now being sold for pennies on the dollar to people in China. They're basically going to have to be giving away these goods for less than the cost of manufacturing them. I'm looking at factories now that are closing down, workers being sent home with their last paycheck, or maybe not being paid at all because if you don't pay the workers, what can they do? They have no recourse. Empty streets and shuttered shops in the surrounding cities where those workers would have gone to buy lunch, right? The noodle shops, the convenience stores, the small retailers, they're all going out of business. The tea shops, they're all going out of business. So for every one factory job you lose two or three other jobs in the surrounding area. Temu used to do big business in the United States. Well, guess what? They just officially turned off all of their Google shopping campaigns because their goods, which they were shipping, you know, by mail to the United States, can't be shipped here anymore because they're now subject to tariffs because Trump eliminated the loophole, which enabled you to send a package worth less than $800 to the U.S. without tariffs. Now all those packages are going to be tariffed, and all those goods are no longer as dirt cheap as they used to be. So America only absorbs about, you know, 1/6 of China's exports. But consider that the next largest customer, Vietnam, well, accounts for about 4%. So yeah, they're selling little bits of stuff here and there around the world, but they will never be able to make up over the short term the loss of the American market. And that American market is gone. China's GDP is going to take a tremendous hit. They're going to be, I estimate, 20 million workers out of a job in China over the next couple months. That hemorrhaging has already started. It's going to continue. That's on top of the already high youth unemployment rate, where about 40%, 4 out of 10 of young people from 16 to 25 are unemployed in China. There are going to be millions of people in China's coastal cities who don't have jobs and can't afford to live, can't afford to buy food.
Stephen, my concern, look, it's just a concern. I'm not saying anyone's doing anything wrong. What does China do in response to this? We know they have a totalitarian at the top. He doesn't have complete ironclad control, obviously. I've heard from several people he's afraid of his generals. He's afraid of this. China has to respond, right? Xi can't afford to just have the economy collapse. They have to do something, right?
Well, they do. And I think they're going to be so caught up in the internal turmoil, the social unrest that is coming. We're talking about the fate of tens of millions of Chinese. And consider this, that, it's only a matter of time before they take to the streets, demanding what? Demanding food. I mean, they're not making a demand for an increase in wages, for example. They're demanding the right to live, the right to survive. And look, these people have nowhere else to go. I spent 10 years in Asia. I spent many years in China. And I lived in villages. I lived in small towns. 40 years ago, the people now out of work could have gone back to the villages. That's where they came from. That's where their families were. They could go back. They would have a room. They would have a house. They could farm in the fields. 20 years ago, they could have gone back to the villages. So people in the villages would have been older now, and some of the fields would have not been farmed, but they still could have survived. But this generation was raised by their grandparents in the villages. Their parents grew up in the cities. They grew up in the cities. And those villages are now empty. Those grandparents are now in their 70s and 80s and dying out. The fields aren't being farmed anymore. Some of the villages in the marginal areas are completely abandoned. In other words, they can't go back. There's no place for them to go back to. They're stuck in the cities. So there's a huge floating population of people in the cities. And I think, so there's no soft rice paddy to land on this time. There's no going home. So yeah, I expect food riots. And sure, you've got China with the People's Armed Police, 1.1 million members of something called the People's Armed Police. What is the People's Armed Police? Well, it's 1 million members of the Chinese military who were transferred into the police force after the Tiananmen demonstrations of 30-some years ago. These are military units. They have tanks. They have armored personnel carriers. They have heavy artillery. And they're there specifically to make sure there's not a rebellion against the Chinese Communist Party. But I think there's going to be turmoil in China. And here, what do we do? Well, we may be paying a little more for goods from China, which most of us can afford to do. We can do without the extra strands of Christmas lights or the trampoline for the kids to jump in. But in China, we're talking about literally a life and death situation with millions of people going to bed hungry every night. And there's a real possibility, first time since the 1960s, of a famine. China can't feed itself. China imports a third of all the grain that the people eat every year, the soybeans, the corn, all of the other grains. They can't grow enough food to feed their own people. So I'm thinking, and actually I'm hoping that Xi Jinping, the leader of China, the Chinese Communist Party, will be so caught up dealing with the internal turmoil and trying to prevent the complete collapse of the economy that they won't engage in any foreign adventures. But it's going to be a close run thing, because what's the best way to distract your people from the fact that they have hungry bellies and they're having to tighten their belts? Well, engaging in a little foreign war will sometimes do that. The Chinese people have already been told by Xi Jinping, the leader of the Communist Party, that they must be prepared to eat bitterness. Chirku in the Chinese phrase, eat bitterness. That means prepare for hard times. And that doesn't mean just skipping a meal in China. That means that hard times, you may starve to death.
Wow. China has, they've had a famine or two in the past. Stephen, thank you so much. I appreciate you, sir, very much. That's good, right? But I think the same thing you think. There's going to be a response. An economy, a country that size, and not just going to collapse without a fight. I love sleeping. I sleep good all the time. Look, I'm a natural sleeper. But as somebody who is a natural sleeper, I've always had to be very careful when I take something to sleep, because I have my moments where I've had too much caffeine or the day was too stressful. If I take really anything, anything I've ever taken my entire life, I'll sleep forever, and then I'll wake up and I'll feel horrible every single time. I wake up and I want to die. That's why I love Dream Powder from Beam so much. I feel good. I feel rested, not groggy. That's because it's natural. You see, it's a cup of hot chocolate, which is delicious. I love hot chocolate anyway, but it's natural. It has melatonin and reishi and all kinds of things in it. It'll put you to sleep. You'll stay asleep and you'll wake up feeling rested. Go to shopbeam.com/JesseKelly. Get yourself a bag today.
Do you regret saying that President Biden had a mental acuity? He had a sharpness to him. You said that up until July of last year.
I said what I believe to be true.
And you think he was as sharp as you?
I said I had not seen decline. And I hadn't at that point.
You did not see any decline from 2024 Joe Biden to 2021 Joe Biden?
Not when I said that. You know, the thing is, he was sharp. He was on his feet. I saw him, live event. I had meetings with him a couple of times.
Senator, on his feet is not praise. He can speak in sentences is not praise.
All right. Fair enough. Fair enough.
So I have this theory. Joining me now, John Phillips, host of The John Phillips Show, which is now live on the wonderful KSFO in San Francisco. John, so I have this theory about politicians, because I always encourage people to run for office. And I tell them there's a time limit. The second you get elected, it will slowly but surely eat away at your soul the longer you're there. And eventually you're Elizabeth Warren, where you'll just tell these brazen lies without hesitation at all, that slowly you'll become no longer human. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. And I love the way that she was looking at him, because she looked like a parent who was lying to their kid. Yeah, you're going to the dentist, but it's not going to hurt. Just trust me on this one. Where you could tell that she was being only as honest as she had to be to get the result that she wanted. But what you saw there, I think more than anything, was an indictment of the media. How is it that Elizabeth Warren and the rest of them have been lying to us for years and years and years about his mental acuity, and she doesn't get asked about it until she's at the floral shop there? And suddenly it's surprise, you have to explain away something that all of us know isn't true. And it was a lie. It was a complete lie, where we were watching him falling up the stairs on television on a daily basis, talking to dead people. Yet in private, when he's meeting with these Democrats, he's putting together Rubik's Cubes and doing advanced calculus. For a party that has been going on and on and on about the threat to democracy, think about this for a second. They lied to us for 4 years about a demented person who could hide his own Easter eggs, being in charge of the government, when an unelected, unknown body of people were actually calling the shots. And they never got straight with us about who it was that was making the decisions for the last 4 years. How in the world is that democracy?
Yeah. Are the American people angry about that aspect of it, John? I mean, angry at Democrats about the fact that the president of the United States of America wasn't functional. I know the American people rejected an open border. I know they were upset about inflation, and these were the big issues that carried Donald Trump into the White House. But I laughed when we just put up that video of Joe Biden speaking, but I'm still angry about it. I still laugh about it, and I'm still angry that our country was led by that person for 4 years. Are the American people angry about it?
Whenever a party loses an election, there's always a million different factors that go into it. It's usually not one thing that causes you to win or to lose. And Kamala Harris was one of the ones who was in those closed-door rooms with Joe Biden and saw his current condition and lied to us about it on a regular basis. And I think the fact that everyone understood that she had to be aware of this and lied to us about it played a role in people thinking that she was not authentically true during the campaign, which I think was one of her top problems. She couldn't answer a question, and we didn't really know who this person was who wanted to be president, because she's on both sides of every issue. She's saying things that we know to be factually false. And I think that that ultimately ended up being her biggest problem, and lying to us about the condition of Joe Biden played a role in that.
What's she going to do now? Obviously, the rumors are flying she's running for governor, that she may run back for president. But, John, all these problems remain. It's not as if Kamala Harris has been sitting around doing a bunch of heavy reading, boning up on the issues and things like that. That's not, you don't change when you're 60 years old. She is what she's been. She's not going to have any success, certainly not running for president. Where's she go?
She doesn't think she's the reason that she lost. I'm sure she blames Joe Biden for not getting out earlier. I'm sure she blames the Democratic Party, people like Nancy Pelosi and Jim Carville, for wanting an open convention. So she doesn't look in the mirror and say, okay, you're the problem. She doesn't want to go out of politics as a loser. And that's what she is right now. She lost to Donald Trump. And there's a lot of Democrats out there who harbor resentment towards her because of it. So she needs to do something so that her Wikipedia page doesn't say the last act was her losing to Donald Trump. So she can do a couple of different things. She can run for president again, which she might do, in which case she might lose the Democratic primary. And then she goes out a double loser, someone who couldn't win when it was handed to her, and someone couldn't win a Democratic primary for a second time after being a sitting vice president. That would be horrible. Or she could find an office that she thinks is attainable, get elected to that, and say, okay, I may have lost to Donald Trump, but I was a two-term governor of California. The problem for that is that being governor of California is not an easy task, especially right now, where we're in crisis, whether it comes to insurance or homelessness or crime or the budget or fire mitigation or water, whatever. We need someone who's fully engaged, who's been thinking about these things for a while, who has some kind of idea as to what they will do to solve these problems. We don't need another absentee landlord. If she were to run for California governor and she has no ideas, it's going to be a brutal campaign, because that's going to be pointed out at various times on the campaign trail, and she's going to look foolish. If her name idea is enough to get her elected, she's going to be elected to an office that is a full-time job plus, where she doesn't even have interest in the subject matter that she'll have to deal with, let alone some kind of background in solving those problems. So I think that's a minefield for her too. I don't think there are any good options in elected office for Kamala Harris right now.
But how is she going to face any kind of scrutiny from the California media when she never has before? Do they have a new belle of the ball in the Democrat Party out there?
If the Democratic candidates think she has no viability in the future to be president, then she can't punish them. And if she can't punish them, then it's like you're playing in the NFL and the defense lines up offside and you have a free play. So they might be a little bit more aggressive with her than you're expecting them to be. Also, keep in mind who's in this field. You have Eleni Konilakis, who's the lieutenant governor, who is a billionaire. She's from one of the top 10 richest families in California. So if she wants to go scorched earth, she has the resources to really go scorched earth. And the other one is Katie Porter, who everyone in the Democratic Party hates. She ran against their beloved Adam Schiff for the U.S. Senate and got real nasty with him during that campaign, lost that. She has nothing to lose. And if Kamala Harris stands in her way, I have zero doubt that the same woman who dumped a pot of boiling hot potatoes on her ex-husband's head is willing to slam dunk another pot of potatoes right on Kamala.
You don't want to get in front of Katie Porker. She will eat you up. By the way, you're being pretty hard on California, but Oakland seems to have things figured out. This is their new mayor.
Hour. You're calling for a $50 an hour federal minimum wage. That's seven times the current national minimum wage of $7.25 an hour. Can you explain how that would be economically sustainable for small businesses? You have 60 seconds.
Do the math. Just do the math. Of course, we have national minimum wages that we need to raise to a living wage. You're talking about $20, $25, fine. But I have got to be focused on what California needs and what the affordability factor is when we calculate this wage.
Ms. Lee, thank you. Mr. Garvey, you...
John, at some point in time, we get the government we deserve. It's hard to feel bad for Oakland at this point in time. Enjoy.
Close your eyes and re-listen to that and tell me that's not Steve Urkel. You know, she's been in Congress for how many decades now? And then suddenly she loses. She came in fourth when she ran for U.S. Senate, and she was going to go out a loser and decided, okay, well, I'll find the next available job that's open, and I'll do that. So she's going to be the mayor of Oakland, where the last mayor, who was just recalled from office, is looking at 90-plus years in prison for corruption. Part of her final days in office was selling the Coliseum where the Raiders and the A's used to play. That deal is now being called into question. The city's budget depended on that going through. So if that deal is clawed back, my guess is Oakland will be bankrupt. The 911 system doesn't work. The In-N-Out Burger just shut down a profitable location because they said they couldn't make sure that their employees and customers were safe. And now at almost 80 years of age, she decides that this is the job that she wants to take on. It's going to look like the day after the end of the world by the time she leaves office. And it kind of already does now.
Oh, gosh. So Oakland's going to get worse. That's just amazing to me. Yeah. John, thank you, my friend, as always. All right. It's time to lighten the mood. And I enjoy Randy Weingarten. She's known as Communist John Denver on this show. I enjoy her because her lack of self-awareness creates entertainment for you and entertainment for me. For instance, she's not a good speaker by any stretch of the imagination. Her voice is just, it's so much. Yet, because of her role, she just does speeches all the time. And she goes on television shows all the time. And she went on with Martha McCallum, and she called her sweetheart. That was a mistake.
You have actually very,
Martha?
Very difficult
Martha,
outcome.
Martha, sweetheart, listen to me.
Please don't call
it
me sweetheart.
It actually does. I'm sorry. My bad. It actually does matter.
She couldn't help it. I'll see you tomorrow.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.